Hi there, and welcome to episode 7 of the Transforma tu Inglés Profesional podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Smith. Today, I will be talking with Alistair, an amazing coach from my team, all about the expression out of the blue, why the verb to sack someone is mostly used in the UK, the difference between to dismiss someone and to be made redundant, an interesting term called gardening leave, and how to translate alta and baja into English. This podcast is aimed at helping you push your business English communication skills to the next level so that you can grow professionally and achieve your international career goals. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. Enjoy. Hi everyone, today we're going to be continuing a little bit on from the last episode. And the last episode I was telling a story all about the fact that out of the blue I was fired from my first job in the UK. So as usual, Alistair is here to talk with me. Hi Alistair.
Hi, hello, how are you?
I'm fine. So yeah, let's just talk a little bit about this expression, first of all, out of the blue, before we go on to talk a little bit more about different expressions about how somebody can be let go or dismissed. Let's just talk about that quick expression, out of the blue.
Yeah, out of the blue is where something happens by surprise, something you're not expecting. So it could be an old friend, an old school friend, university friend you haven't heard from for years, suddenly gets in touch, calls you or contacts you in Facebook, and it's like, oh, out of the blue. I hadn't had any contact with this person for years, and then out of the blue, they suddenly sent me a message or called me. So it's something that happens by surprise that you're not expecting. I suppose out of the blue, you can imagine the blue is the sky. Something just falls out of the sky completely unexpectedly. I haven't actually looked it up, but using my imagination, I think that's probably the origin of the expression.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Certainly, whenever I hear that expression, I certainly think of the sky, and we would assume that that is definitely some sort of connection there, right? But it's an expression that is kind of useful. Certainly, it's something that you would hear on a regular basis, right? In the UK, it's not one that is unusual in any way, and it's kind of useful to understand and to kind of get an idea of what that actually means, because maybe you would be confused by it initially, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very common, and somebody could say to you in any context, in a business context, they say, oh, I got this email out of the blue, or somebody contacted me out of the blue. So basically, something you're not expecting.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's useful to know, and it's a very common expression.
Yeah, and that was definitely my situation when I was in working in my first job. It certainly wasn't expected at all, and that's why we use that expression. You know, I wasn't expecting to get fired, and in the end, it was completely out of the blue for me. Mm. Okay,
so a total surprise.
A total surprise, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, we wanted just to continue on and talk a little bit about different types of expressions, right, related to the whole idea of despedir a alguien. And obviously the first two that are the most common, or at least quite interesting, are to sack someone or to fire someone, right? And we were talking about this obviously before we recorded this episode, and there are slight differences there, and we kind of felt that sack was probably something that is used more in the UK, don't you think?
Yeah, I think in the United States, they never use sack with that meaning. They say to fire someone. And in Britain, we use fire also. But I think in Britain, more commonly, we would say sack. But definitely, I think in the USA, somebody in the USA use sack. So yeah, they use one word to fire someone. So you have been fired from your job. And in Britain, we say fired. But I think you said fired when you told your story.
Sure.
But lots of British people very often would say, oh, I've been sacked. I don't know where it comes from. It's one maybe we need to research for another episode. Yeah. Or our listeners could research where does that come from, to be sacked. I always imagine you're literally given a sack.
Yeah.
And told, clear your things from your desk, put them in the sack and get out.
That's right. Yeah.
But I've no idea if that is actually true. That's just something you can imagine.
You can imagine that, absolutely. Mm. Often that actually does sort of, it's sort of implied, really, partly because if you are sacked, then often you have to leave the building very quickly, don't you? Yeah. You're not allowed to hang around. So there could be a connection there completely, yeah. Could be.
And fire, well, it's just the idea, firing a gun.
Sure.
So it's like you've been killed, obviously, metaphorically.
Yeah.
Like you're out of the office and you've lost your job. So these are both very informal, we have to say.
Yes.
So, you know, a lawyer in legal terminology would not use sacked and fired. They would use the word dismissed.
That's
right.
So
dismissed is really a universal word you can use anywhere in the English-speaking world.
Yeah.
And everyone would understand it. And a lawyer in a legal situation, they would say you've been dismissed. But then informally, people say sacked and fired. And sacked is particularly British. I think in Australia, New Zealand, for example, they would also use sacked. But USA, definitely not.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, dismiss is kind of that a little bit more formal. It certainly would be something that most human resources professionals should know in terms of that particular word, because it just kind of gives another different type of perception, right? It's the idea of sacking someone or firing someone is something maybe the way that you would describe it to your friend, as you were mentioning before,
yeah.
Right? But in this particular, most of the time you would say, I had to dismiss this individual last week or something like that, right? So it's much
definitely.
More it's much much better word to use in a formal context, and it's, as you say, also legal context.
Yeah, it's far too informal for it for human resources when they have to dismiss people and they have to inform them both verbally and in writing. You'd use the word dismiss because it's
That's
the legal
right.
terminology, it's the correct word. Sacking and firing, yeah, very informal. The person dismissed may then obviously say to their friends, family, colleagues, oh, I've been sacked, I've been fired. Also, if it's a boss who's very angry, if you've done something wrong and a boss, you see this in films, particularly American movies,
yeah,
where the boss, you know, there's a big argument or somebody's done something really bad and the boss just says to them in front of everyone shouting, you're fired, get out. But that's obviously not how human resources would sit down with you in an interview to inform you in a formal, correct, legal way.
Of course.
That's somebody losing control and you're fired, you're sacked, get out.
Yeah.
That happens in movies. Well, it occasionally happens in real life, I'm sure.
For sure.
Luckily, it's never happened to me, but I'm sure when you were informed in that job, the person probably didn't use that language to you. Hey, you're sacked.
No, they didn't actually.
Informal.
No, it's very informal, yes. And it would kind of almost be sort of unprofessional, right?
A bit unprofessional, to use that language.
In fact, I think the actual terminology that they used with me is they probably didn't use any of those words, and probably they didn't even use dismiss, because even, I mean, that is something that is almost often used to describe the situation afterwards. But
in writing.
Yes. And what he actually told me, I think, was the specific phrase, which is, we have to let you go, right?
Oh, classic.
Yes. We have to let you go, which is kind of like a little bit softer, a little bit nicer, especially when you're speaking obviously directly to that individual, right? And I think I used that phrase also when I explained my story. And so that's it's an expression that is very, very useful. And I think that is, I don't know whether it would be used equally in the UK and the US. I'm not sure.
Well, it's a euphemism, isn't it? Because they don't have to let you go.
Well,
they want to let you go. They're dismissing you.
That's right.
But it sounds much nicer and, you know, oh, we're sorry, we have to let you go.
Yeah.
As if it's an obligation. You're like, oh, okay, thank you. You don't have to let me go, but you're choosing to do so.
Yeah.
So it's a way to make it sound much softer, much nicer than you're dismissed or you're fired, which sound very, very hard, very personal, no?
Well, that's right. In fact, it's also quite interesting to note that you can actually use that in common conversation as well, right? Like if you meet somebody in the street and you say, like, you're kind of in a bit of a rush, you can say, oh, I have to let you go. I need to rush to the shops or something like that.
It's
you know?
True,
so,
to end a conversation.
Yeah, to end a conversation.
You need to escape.
Yeah.
So I'll have to let you, or on the telephone, I'll have to let you go.
Yeah.
I've got to do something.
Yeah. It's kind of it's interesting that they're kind of used in both of those contexts, and it kind of almost, I have to let you go, it kind of almost implies that it's being imposed by somebody else, you know, that is, yeah, it's not your decision almost, you know, yeah. But kind of external factors are being placed
in a company sense, that's what it means. It's, you know, really what they're saying is because of economic factors or money or whatever it may be, they don't want you to continue in this post. Am I saying we have to let you go? It's sort of saying, well, there are factors beyond our control, or not beyond our control. But yeah, it sort of takes away some of the, for the person having to give the bad news, the human resources manager or whoever it is, it's sort of saying, well, you know, it's not my fault. I'd love to keep you here, but, you know, we have to let you go.
Exactly.
So it's easy for them to give that bad news using that kind of euphemistic language. No?
Exactly. So yeah, that's a good one. Definitely. I mean, certainly an interesting expression. Obviously, there are others too. You can also make someone redundant, which is also slightly different, right? Because to make someone redundant is very much connected to market conditions, right? It's kind of the idea that the conditions of the market have changed. Maybe the market has, there's less work available because of these changes. A certain number of individuals will no longer be required in the company, right? And so you'd have to make them redundant because of that particular issue.
Well, redundant, you know, it's like obsolete. Yeah. Actually, it's quite a cruel word, because the idea that you say, I've been made redundant. So it's like, I am no longer required. But obviously, it's not you as an individual who's redundant, it's your post. So your work or your post is no longer required by the company, not you as a person. But it sounds quite hard to say that a person is redundant, like you are no longer wanted, no?
Yeah.
But it's not personal. It's, you've been a very good worker. We're really grateful for what you've done. They've got no problems with you. You do your job well. But because of the economic situation, the crisis, the recession, reorganization in the company, some kind of reason, usually economic, unfortunately, you know, we can't afford to keep paying you. It's to save costs. So to reduce costs in the company, that post, that position disappears. So obviously the person also disappears.
Exactly, yeah.
That is the way it works. So obviously they do not replace you. If you're fired, sacked, dismissed, they replace you with somebody else. So it's you who is fired for some reason because, you're not good at the job or you're always late or, well, all kinds of reasons. For some reason they do not want to continue with you and they contract or hire, to use the correct word, they hire somebody else. But if you're made redundant, it's your post, it's your job that disappears, so they do not replace you. They can't legally.
Sure.
That would be illegal to replace somebody you're making redundant. It's a false redundancy, no, it's not true.
Yeah, exactly. So all these different types of terms have or slightly different meanings, right? And you have to be sometimes quite specific and understand the different terminologies quite clearly. There's another one that's kind of very interesting in English, which is called gardening leave. Now, I mean, for most of our listeners, that would be kind of probably a new term, right? Something that is kind of seems very strange, because why would you refer to any sort of gardening in terms of something related to a job, right? And the fact that you no longer have to go to work or no longer allowed to go to work. And this is kind of an interesting one, right? Because it's often given to people when the company decides that they would like you to leave, but at the same time, they don't want to finish your contract immediately. So they basically put you on gardening leave. But it's a kind of a very strange term, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you don't have to be gardening. There's no obligation to work in the garden.
Yeah.
Sounds very, very British or very English, doesn't it?
Because it does. It does.
British
absolutely.
People in general are obsessed with gardening. It's a national pastime.
That's right.
Which is probably why they use that expression, gardening leave. So, yeah, you can go home and, you know, you'll have plenty of free time to work in the garden, as most people in Britain live in houses with gardens.
Yes.
Spend a lot of time gardening. Yeah. So that's probably why they use that word. So it sounds, yes, slightly strange. Why would you send somebody home to do their hobby? Why not listening to music or reading books, but not gardening?
That's right. Exactly. It seems very, very strange. But the connection surely must be related to that idea, right? That most people in the UK live in maybe houses. I would say that's probably
the vast majority.
Vast majority. And so most people have a garden, whether it's a big one or a small one, but most of them do. Yeah. And so, you know, it's not impossible for somebody to go home, and most of them would actually be able to
spend some time gardening, sure.
That's right.
Well, British people, actually, they're very, very proud of their gardens.
That's true.
And they look after them. Yeah. And I know Spanish people, my wife, when she first went to England, one of the things that was a culture shock or really she found very different or strange was the fact that the front gardens of people's houses generally do not have walls. They're open to the street.
Yeah.
So you can walk in the street and you can see everybody's garden is open to the street. And she was like, but you could just walk in their garden and you could vandalize it. You could steal the flowers. Or they say, sure. Yeah, you could, but generally people don't do that. They respect the gardens.
Yeah.
It wouldn't occur to anyone. And people are very proud. They want people to see their beautiful lawn and their beautifully cut and their flowers. And it's almost a competition between neighbours looking at each other's lawns and who's got the best garden or the best kept garden.
So
most people are very proud of their gardens, and they want people to look at them and see them.
Yeah, exactly. As you say, a national pastime, certainly something that's very specific, right, to the UK. And kind of continuing on that same vein, right, in terms of leave, obviously there are many different types of leave that are much more common than gardening leave, right? And it's kind of just important to highlight those different elements of leave. Obviously, you can have holiday leave, right? You can have sick leave, you can have maternity leave or paternity leave, all of which are kind of quite similar in Spanish, so it's kind of like not too difficult to connect them there. But the key word is leave there, right? Because that is sometimes quite difficult for Spanish speakers to get a grasp and get hold of.
Also to understand, because many times when I say leave, they understand live, L-I-V-E, vivir, instead of leave, L-E-A-V-E, which is from the, you know, to dejar or salir. I suppose, has dejado el trabajo, well, you're not at work, you've left work.
Yeah.
Although in this sense is usually temporary, not left work permanently. I imagine that's the origin of using the word leave.
It's true.
Again, I'm guessing here. So yeah, all these, it's an absence, no, ausencia. So when you're not at work, for some reason you're absent, holiday, you're ill, sick, paternity, maternity, as you mentioned, all these are forms of leave, absence from work.
Yeah, exactly.
You can also say to be off work, perhaps slightly more informal. Maybe leave is a bit more formal. So you'd say, I'm off work sick or ill. I'm off work. I've taken the day off work for some reason. So
yeah.
It's like holiday. No, taking holiday leave is to be off work on holiday. So there's two expressions you can use. No?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very. So both of those work absolutely fine. As you said, leave a little bit, maybe a bit more formal. Off, I'm off work at the moment. Maybe something you would say, maybe more to your friend or something like that. So that's both of those very important to remember. Partly because it's sometimes difficult to connect them, right? Because in Spanish you would say estoy de baja, and that can sometimes cause some issues, right? Because Spanish speakers have that in their mind, estoy de baja, and it's kind of maybe difficult to connect that through to this word of leave or to be off. Yeah,
because we don't use the word baja, which
that's right
means, you know, low or down, or
that's
so there
exactly
is no
right
word baja in that sense. So yeah, you have to say, so está de baja de, well, baja de enfermedad or baja de maternidad. So we just say, as we said before, you know, sick leave or maternity leave, etc., or you're off work sick. So you have to use a sentence, you know, it's a phrase, not just a word, baja.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the complication of, again, with Spanish speakers, with the translation of alta.
Yeah.
Because they're opposites, the baja and the alta.
Exactly.
And that perhaps the alta is even more difficult for English to translate into English.
That's right. That's right. Because it's kind of a word that's very, very useful in Spanish, you know, and commonly used, right? But then to actually translate that into English can be a little bit difficult. So, for example, if you've been off work for a while and you want to go back to work because you're kind of bored at home and you kind of feel as if you want to get going again, and in Spanish, obviously, you would go to the doctor to get the alta, right? And we talked about this in the before, right? And it's just quite difficult to think of an English equivalent in that particular case. This is something that we have, it's literally happened to me where I've had to try to explain the process of getting the alta in English, and I've kind of struggled.
Yeah, it's difficult because I think when I worked in UK, which is a long time ago, I was never ill or sick. Well, maybe one day, but I never really needed. For example, I don't think I ever went to the doctor to ask for. So the Baja would be a sick certificate or a sick note.
Yeah.
From the doctor that gives you permission that you can show to your employer that you are sick. And then they'll give you a sick. You say, I've got a sick note from the doctor or a sick certificate for, I don't know, 5 days or a week. Which is your Baja, no?
Yeah.
But then if it's 5 days and at the end of the 5 days you're feeling fine, you're feeling well, you just go back to work. And the concept of going to the doctor to ask pedir la alta, I've never done that in my life, so I don't think you need to do it. You just basically go back to work when the sick certificate expires at the end of the period.
Sure, I think that's how it works, yes.
Yeah, you just go back to work. And if you feel sick, you go back to the doctor and you ask for an extension. Can you extend my sick certificate?
That's right.
And the doctor will look at you, examine you and say, yeah, okay, I'll give you another week.
Yeah.
Or no, they could refuse. Say, no, I think you're perfectly okay. You can go back to work.
Yeah.
So your sick note expires and you go back to work. So the concept of the alta, we don't really have a word or even the concept.
That's right. And that's kind of just super interesting, right? Because when maybe a process doesn't exist in one particular country, the word also doesn't exist.
Yeah, there's no word for it.
There's no actual word for it because nobody needs to do it.
Yeah, so it's often a problem, isn't it, with translating? Okay, I know what you mean. Living in Spain, I know those words and I know how you use them. And they're very useful, as you say, Baja and Alta.
Yeah.
And used in other circumstances as well. It's not just to do with work. Like the alta in a website.
Oh, yes, exactly.
How would you say that?
Darse
la alta. No?
Yeah, exactly. Which means you basically would sign up, I think, on a website. Or you can sign in, but sign in and sign up is slightly different because sign in implies that you've already signed up.
And you have to enter your password, no, to enter the site.
Exactly. So that is also a very interesting one. It kind of takes on that idea of alta y baja, but it's in a different context, right?
And first you'd sign up, which is give your details. Maybe you have to give your email, your name and address. And then once you become a member or you're signed up for the website, you can use it. Maybe each time you enter, you have to sign in with your password.
Yeah.
And what else?
No, you I think that's kind of also a good example of how you can, you know, just small prepositions in English make a big difference, right, as well. And of course, prepositions are always like a key, difficult thing for Spanish speakers because, you know, they can make such a difference they're tiny, tiny words, but they can make such a big difference to meaning, right? But we also talked about, obviously, the whole idea of when you have some sort of utilities, you know, so gas or water, and you might have a particular contract there, the whole concept of alta y baja can also apply, right?
Yeah, when you rent or buy a new flat, new house, and you need to, in Spanish you'd say, you know, darse la alta, no?
Yeah.
To get your, what we call the utility companies. So gas, water, telephone, electricity. So the basic supply of those services to your residents. And you have to contact the utility companies and enter into a contract with them for the supply of gas, electricity, etc. for a service, no? So how would you say that in English?
Well, there are obviously you could sign the contract. Basically, if you're you're talking about the alta, then you could just we would just say sign the contract. I haven't signed the contract yet, so that again is kind of difficult to link across. It's true because you're thinking, okay, how do you say alta? But really, in that case, you have to talk about a contract and the fact that you've signed it or not. So imagine that somebody asks you, have you signed up for the gas and water yet? And you would say, no, I haven't signed up yet. Why I don't have any. You know, I don't have the water. There's no water at the moment because I haven't signed up.
I haven't signed the contract yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're entering into a legal contract for the supply of services to your residents. And you have to pay off and you have to give your bank account details so they can take the money every month directly from your bank account.
Yeah.
So basically, you enter into a contract. So you sign a contract for supply of gas, electricity, water with the utility company.
Exactly.
And then, of course, you have the opposite.
Yes.
Das de Bach, Alta.
Yeah. Well, so in this, you also obviously have, you have that, but then also you have the cancelling the contract, right? You would have to cancel the contract, and that would be the Bacha. But, you know, like, very, very tricky, very tricky. Can be really tricky to get those connections right and understand exactly what type of terminology you have to use, right? But certainly, yeah, good to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, I got confused there. I've just noticed because I said when you end it, is the Alta is the other way around.
Yes, exactly.
So the Alta is the signing the contract. And then obviously exactly. When you end, or you could say terminate, which sounds very formal, very legal.
Yeah.
Terminate the contract, end the contract is exactly. When you do the Bacha, no?
Exactly, exactly, yeah. Terminate the contract, cancel the contract.
Cancel maybe is the word.
Yeah, I mean, it could be cancel or could be terminate. I mean, actually, terminate sounds a little bit more probably correct, actually.
But more legal sound.
Yes. It's actually probably the better use of or phraseology, let's say. But yeah, perfect. Okay, so that was our little review of those specific types of expressions all related to that situation and story that I explained last time. But what we wanted to do quickly at the end of this episode is just refer to a few comments made by our listeners. So let's go through a few of those, okay, Alistair? And I think what we'll start with is a comment made by Guadalupe, who mentioned the whole idea of estrenar, which is obviously something that we covered in our first episode. And she came up with a very good alternative, which we didn't cover, which is the whole idea of something being brand new.
Yeah, we didn't think of that one. Thank you, Guadalupe.
Well,
that's why it's very useful to have the feedback from our listeners with suggestions for. So yeah, you could say, I've just got a brand new car, brand new pair of shoes. So something brand, it's nothing to do with, but it could be confusing with the word brand.
Yeah.
So you're not referring to the brand of the make of the shoes, no? The brand name of your car, or like whatever, Volkswagen, BMW is a brand.
Yeah.
So you say, this car is brand new. It just means it's de estreno, no? It's a new car that you've just bought.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good suggestion, I have to say. We didn't think about it at all, but when we saw it, we both thought, yeah, that is a really good alternative to estrenar. So thank you very much, Guadalupe. And then there was another email about the whole concept of the town hall, which is a term that you came across, but I wasn't sure about. And also a friend of mine also mentioned that it does exist. So that was perfect to hear that it was actually something that is used quite, well, I don't know whether commonly or
yeah, maybe not
frequently,
commonly, but I brought it up because I remembered one of my students had mentioned it to me in the past. And then I started doubting. I said, I didn't exactly know what it meant, but it was an English expression being used in Spanish speakers. And obviously town hall is the ayuntamiento. So I was confused, like, what's a town hall meeting? It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
But then I started doubting that maybe I'd imagined it. So I'm not going crazy. Thank you for the person emailing in to confirm that this expression does actually exist and it's used in business. And the definition that they gave us,
Yes, I think it was something to do with a large scale meeting. Was it like that or something?
We discussed it before.
Yeah,
I think they said it was a department meeting where you discuss sort of overall achievements, strategy, challenges from the top down. So maybe it's a meeting if your company is part of a bigger group, a big multinational, could be some big meeting from the headquarters, where everybody connects to the meeting if it's remote, or to talk about challenges, achievements, maybe results of the company.
Yeah.
And he said they're usually on a quarterly basis, or it depends, on the company. So it's that kind of meeting to pass down information, share information from top to bottom.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that means certainly was new for me. So a very, very, very interesting
term.
Yeah,
thank you to that listener for that definition.
Absolutely. And then there was also Raquel, who obviously was listening to us when we discussed a particular term, which was furniture, I think it was, and the whole idea of the confusion
with countables, uncountables.
Uncountables, exactly.
So muebles.
Yes, and Raquel actually suggested one particular word that would actually help Spanish speakers kind of get that little, kind of like a little trick, basically, which is the word in Spanish is mobiliario, okay? Yeah. And that particular word and the framed, let's say, is a good way of thinking or avoiding that mistake of uncountable and countable with furniture, right?
Yeah, because she pointed out that mobiliario is uncountable in Spanish too. Mm-hmm. And instead of thinking it as thinking of the concept of furniture as muebles, which is countable, to think of it more of mobiliario. Mobiliario is things that can be moved, so furniture, but it's an uncountable concept. No, it's all your furniture, all your muebles is your mobiliario. Mm-hmm. And they have the opposite in mobiliario. So like an estate agent or real estate agent mm-hmm. is an inmobiliario, because things that can't be moved, so property, land, buildings, is the opposite, no? So if yeah. you think of furniture as in terms of mobiliario, things that can be moved, it's a similar concept to English. So that could help you in Spanish, thinking in Spanish of not committing the mistake of saying a furniture exactly. or two furnitures.
That's right.
Because it's all mobiliario, no?
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. So it's a really great tip
great
there.
Suggestion.
From, absolutely. Yeah. So it's fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Raquel, for that particular one. So yeah, what I would say is if there are any listeners out there who would like to give us any more inspiration, then definitely mm-hmm. send us your tips, ideas, questions. We definitely want to hear from all of you. And obviously you'll get the email at the end of this episode.
Yeah, they're very welcome.
Absolutely.
Contributions people want
absolutely,
to make.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there you go, Alistair. Thank you once again for taking some time to chat with me today. Well, that's it for this particular episode, but we'll be back again next week. So until then, we'll speak soon.
Okay. Cheers, bye.
All right, see you then. Bye-bye. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Transforma tu Inglés Profesional podcast. If you have any feedback or just want to get in touch with us for any particular reason, you can do that through our email address, which is coach@danielsmith.es. And just send us a quick email and we'd love to hear from you. All your feedback is very, very welcome. And for now, thank you very much and I hope to see you again next week.